Today's shiur is entitled Talmud Torah as an activity that affects the cosmos. It is based on a Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Gimel Amud Bet, where a piece of Agadata is brought, which says as follows. Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, Shteimesre Shaot Have Hayom. The statement is made that the day is 12 hours long, daylight hours. Shalot Arishonot, Shalosh Arishonot, the first 3 hours, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yoshev Osek B'Torah. The first 3 hours, God sits and engages in the study of Torah. Shniot, the second set, second 3 hour set, Yoshev V'dan Et Kol HaOlam Kulo. He sits and he judges the entire world. Kevan Shiroesh Nitchayev Olam Kliya. Since he sees, however, that the world, as a result of judging the world strictly, is deserving of destruction. Omeid Mikisei Adin V'Yoshev Al Kisei Rachamim. So he gets up from his chair, his throne of judgment, and he sits on his throne of mercy. The Shaila I see is asked in some of the Farshim on the Ein Yaakov if he every day does this, and he knows he's going to get up every day from his throne of judgment and move over to the throne of mercy. So then why doesn't he just go to the throne of mercy straight off if he sees that this is the way it is with human beings? So the answer that is provided is that even so, there is a value to sit on the throne of judgment, because tzaddikim and those who are capable are judged through din, which is a higher level of judgment. And consequently as well, sometimes if we see great tzaddikim who pass away and seemingly we don't understand their sin, we know that's why Chazal tell us that a tzaddik is judged shechud asara very, very carefully in terms of his actions, because he may be under the governmental providence of Hashem of midas adin and not midas harachmim, as he is capable of living under midas adin, which is ideally how God wanted to create the world. Shalishiot, the third set of hours in the day. Yoshev Bizan et Kol HaOlam Kulo. God sits and he provides sustenance for the entire world. Mikarne Reimim ad Beitzei Kinim. He does so from the greatest of the beasts all the way to the smallest of creatures. Reviyot. And then in the final hours, Yoshev u'mesachek im Leviathan. He sits and he plays with the great sea creature, the great sea monster. Shenemar, as it says, Leviathan ze yatzarta lesachek bo. You created this sea monster in order to play with it. Exactly what does it mean that he plays with the sea monster? So some Mefarshim point out that this is an expression that not only is God relating to the sea monster, some say Kal v'chomer, all the more so if he relates this way to the sea monster, which is something you would think the Kadosh Baruch Hu, with his intellect and his knowledge and his concern for creation, would not even get involved in. If he even chooses to play with the sea monster, then all the more so does he willfully get engaged with his creation. In going back and assessing what the meaning of this Agadata is, first of all, I think it's clear that everyone should understand this is not to be taken literally. How can someone take this Agadata literally, that God does this during the first 2 hours of the day and so on? First of all, God is beyond time. Certainly these hours are not relevant to God. He doesn't have 12 daylight hours. in which he engages in these things. And moreover, what type of time frame are we talking about? Are we operating in Eretz Yisrael? Are we operating in another part of the world? Eastern time, Central time, Mountain time, Pacific time? What are we talking about here? So certainly we're trying to get some concept across without necessarily taking this Agadita too literally. And the Maharal provides a beautiful explanation in terms of what the effort is by this Agadita to get across. He says as follows, Da ki yesh deot philosophiot sha'amru azav Hashem et ha'aretz v'hu mesulak min ha'tachtonim. The Maharal says you should know that there are philosophical views that hold that God abandoned the earth and that he separated himself from his creation. And in this Agadita, the point that is being made comes to specifically contradict, to go against this notion and its intent. Ki hu yitbarach eino mesulak min haolam. Because we are being told in this that God is not separated from the world he created. Beritzono mitached imanim saim. And it is his desire to become one, to unite, to connect to his creatures. We will see in 1 second exactly how the Maharal continues to express this in the Agadita. However, I do want to make the point that when it's said here by the Maharal that there were those who held that God exists, that God created the world, however, but then God abandoned the world, so I was thinking, obviously, in my own mind, that this has to do with the view what's known as deism in philosophy. The deists, who many of which were some of our founding fathers in the United States, people such as Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson and others, who were the ones who signed our constitution in this country. So such individuals believed that there was a notion that God existed, but that he basically wound up the world like a clock, and the world, as we say sometimes in Chazal, Olam kemin hago noheg, the world just runs on its own, and God, in a sense, is not really involved in creation. As I said, this was a view put forth by the founding fathers of this country, many of them, which means this dates back to the 18th century. And part of the purpose of such a philosophy, for those who lived in an age as they did, of enlightenment, wherein they were considering, on the one hand, great technological advances, and on the other hand, the fact that religion was still something that had been a part of the history of the world, and yet there was no way to indicate scientifically that God existed, and indeed, one could not prove here on this earth that he was even here. So it was suggested through this approach that basically God did exist, however, that he was absent from his world. Some call this an absentee God theory. God made the world, but then he had nothing else to do with it. So the problem is, the Maharal says that this Agadita goes against such a view, but the deists arose, it seemed to me, in the 18th century. So how could it be already that the Maharal says that this is what the Agadita is speaking to, or how could the Maharal at least understand it as being relevant to that notion? Now, the Maharal, in fact, there's a scholarly debate about when he lived, even when he was born at least. Most say, as I see, he was born in 1512. Some say 1520, some say 1526. We'll go with the view that I see as standard, 1512. That being the case, he lived, it seems, some 200 years before the deist philosophy became popular in the United States. But this kasha, in fact, can be answered and actually makes a great deal of sense, because looking more deeply into this notion, for example, in the Encyclopedia of Philosophy under deism, it is said there that actually the earliest known use of the concept of deist and deism was in 1564. In 1564, by Pierre Viret, a disciple of Calvin, he already mentioned this idea of deism, although he was himself not in favor of it. He considered such people who engaged in this belief of God to actually be atheists and people who did not believe that God created the heaven and the earth, that were not true believers, and he bitterly attacked such individuals who had such beliefs as deism. But nonetheless, we see that this term actually existed and was already attacked in the year 1564. Now, as I said, the Maharal was born in 1512. He died in 1609. So certainly this idea of deism had been out for 45 years before he died. And there is no doubt in my mind that it could be that he approaches this Agadita as being so meaningful to his time, because deism was already being discussed as a philosophy that would become popular and would continue to do so for many centuries to come. The Maharal, as I said, in explaining this Gemara, this Agadita, says, therefore, that the purpose of this Agadita is to show that God, in fact, is involved with his creation, and it does so by giving four different stages, each one showing more of his involvement. The first, he says, where the Kadosh Baruch Hu is involved with the study of Torah, we will get back to a little bit later on, but one could understand that to mean that God is in a sense far off and engaged, you know, in sitting in his base medrash and learning Torah. Next, God judges the world, we are told, and that involves a greater involvement of the Kadosh Baruch Hu with the Bria, because he has to know all the thoughts of mankind and all of the actions of every human being in order to properly elicit his judgment. And obviously, if he goes from Din to Rachamim, it's an indication that he is well aware of the type of judgment that is taking place. The third area in which he is involved, as we have said, is even more intense, says the Maharal, that is in knowing what every creature on earth, not just human beings, as was the case perhaps by him sitting in judgment, but in terms of providing for all creatures the food that they need to survive. Mikarne Reim Ad Beit Sekinim, even beyond humanity. This shows even more involvement of God with his creation. And finally, says the Maharal, the fact that he is involved with the Leviathan as just one example of his involvement with creation, as we said, this shows something that's not obligatory by God. In other words, the other elements, perhaps, of God's involvement with Torah, in terms of God's involvement in judging this world and God's providing for the world. So those things God had to do as an obligation as the creator of this world. However, in terms of the playing with the Leviathan, the playing of God with the Bria, with his creation, this is something that is not required of God to do. This is something that he wants to do. It is the desire of God to be involved with his creation, to play with his creation, to engage with his creation, if you will. So far from the deist idea that God would rather be separate and have no connection whatsoever with the world, God specifically wants just the opposite, to be involved with his creation. Now, in going to Halach LaMaaseh from this, before we return to the notion of being Osek B'Torah, it's interesting that Tosafot brings down the following. He says, Yesh Omrim, Ki Lekach Tiknu B'Kedushat Musaf, Lomar Mimakomo Hu Yifen, Ki Sta Musaf B'Shniot Va, Vaz Hu Yoshev V'Dan, V'Anu Mipalanim Shifaneh Mikisei Din, Lashevet Bikisei Rachamim. Tosfos says that there's a view that holds, or those who say, that the reason in our liturgy of Kedusha, of Musaf, on Shabbos, and of Yontif, we have the statement that says, Mimkomo hu yifen berachamim, that from his place we ask that God should turn in mercy. Why do we ask he should turn in mercy? Because Musaf is said at the time when God begins to judge the world at that time of the morning. And as he is involved in judgment from Midas Adin, from strict judgment, we request at that time in our davening that he turn toward Rachamim. And that's why we have Mimkomo. So you see that from this Agadata, interestingly, we even get practical halacha in terms of the language of the liturgy, in terms of how we request things from God. Now Tosos disagrees with this view. He says, "Ein nira delamaidin maskanim b'samuch rishonim yoshe v'dan lo yitachein elavadai matbea shel tfila kach." Who? Tosos ends up saying he disagrees with this view because later on in Daf Dalet Amud Bet, in fact, there is a debate about this order of the events in God's day. There are those who hold that actually first he sits and judges and then he engages in Torah. If that's the case, if that's the maskana, as Tosfos seems to imply, others however disagree, but if that's the maskana, then during the time when we say Musaf and say Mimkomo hu yifen barachami, may God turn toward mercy, it is not the time of judgment that was earlier on. So Tosfos says thereby that this is just to be seen as something which is a natural part of the style of tefillah, that we ask for rachamim. It is not related to this agadic fact that we learn about God in this Gemara. In the Shari Mitzuyanim B'Halacha, he brings down in the Ramah, he says, the Ramah says, V'Rosh Hashanah Noagim Lomar Kol Echad L'Chaveiro L'Shana Tova Tikatev. We know that is the custom to say in Rosh Hashanah, everyone says to his fellow, may you be inscribed for a good year in the Book of Life. And then in the Magen Avraham, it's brought down, Shalola Omro Achar Gimel Shal Krishonot Shekavar Nigmar Akativa. The Magen Avraham brings down, in the name of the Levush, that one should not say this to someone, the Shana Tovat Katev, should not say, be inscribed, may be inscribed in the Book of Life for the coming year, during the first 3 hours, after the first 3 hours, because he says that after the first 3 hours, already the judgment has been decided. So this would make no sense to now say that. But then he says, "Begimah rishon arakadosh baruch hu yoshev v'dan," and that's because this view is holding that in the first 3 hours, God is sitting in judgment, like we said, the maskana of the Gemara seemed to be on Daf Dalet Amud Bet, and the view that Tosfot went with. The Magen Avraham hikshala, but the Magen Avraham disagrees. Darei anakai malan dibishniot yoshev v'dan. So the Magen Avraham holds, not like Tosafot, but the Yesh Omrim in Tosafot, that actually God judges the world in the second set of hours. Tosafot rejected, the Magen Avraham accepts that that's in fact why we say, in fact, that God should turn toward mercy at this time, and we say this in Musaf. And even though Tosafot disagrees, however, This is the view of the Magen Avraham. And it's interesting, if that's the case, so he says, Then you can say L'shana Tova to someone, even until Chatzot. We've always heard, perhaps, I know I have, that you don't say L'shana Tova Tikatev after the daily davening of the Rosh Hashanah service, because we have faith that indeed our prayers were accepted and we've been written in the Book of Life. But here you see that the issue is that it's not a question of if it's been accepted or not. It's a question of it's all over. It's already been decided. So that after Chatzos, maybe that's kind of equivalent with after the davening in Rosh Hashanah, probably people go almost toward that time, that it is not relevant anymore to say L'shana Tova Tikatev. And the question is brought down as well, however, if this is the case, the Sharon Mitzvah Halacha says, in Cain, says, Tiksha Echom Rim B'Yom HaKippurim Mimakomo B'chol HaTfilot. However, we know that Mimkomo Hu Yifen B'Rachamim, may God turn toward mercy, which is being said here, is said during the second segment of the day when God sits in judgment and he starts with Midas Adin, so we ask him to go to Midas HaRachamim. But if that's the case, how can we say Mimkomo on Yom Kippur throughout the davening? In Yom Kippur we say it not only in Musaf, but we also say it in Mincha, we also say it in Ne'ilah. So God's not sitting in judgment there, is he? But he writes, Yom Kippur Mekadosh Baruch Hu Dan B'chol Hayom Kulo. So he answers that since Yom Kippur, the tefillah goes throughout the day. It's not just one tefillah, another tefillah. It goes throughout the day. Obviously, even as opposed to Rosh Hashanah, where there's a break, on Yom Kippur, the judgment goes throughout the day, and consequently, that's why it's appropriate to have Mimkomo said throughout the day. I imagine, just like we have, for example, Vidui throughout the day, and the Yud Gimel Midas HaRachamim, in other words, to try to counteract the Midas Adin that may be there throughout the day, so too, we could understand, I believe it's saying, that we could have Mimkomo. But we see once again that as a result of the Sagadata, there's even a notion of Halach Lamaisa, so to speak, in terms of Kiddusha, in terms of saying L'shana Tova to someone on Rosh Hashanah. I'd like to now take a deeper look at this idea that God, during the first 3 hours, is Osek B'Torah. Well, what does that mean, that God is Osek B'Torah? So the Maharal says as follows. The Maharal says that it's not that God is studying Torah as we think that he is studying Torah. It's based on the notion that we know we have a principle of Yistakel Ba'araita Ubara Alma, that God looked into the Torah and he created the world. That in fact the world was the blueprint for creation. And in fact in Bereishit Rabba Perek Aleph it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu bit Torah Ubarat Olam V'Torah Merit Bereishit Bara Elokim V'Ein Reishit Ela Torah. So already from the opening of the Medrash, we see this idea that God used the Torah in order to create the world. Bereishit, with Reishit, Ein Reishit Ela Torah, Shenemar Hashem Kanani Reishit Darko. So from the very beginning, God created the world with the Torah as the blueprint. And so when it means God is Osek B'Torah, therefore, says the Maharal, it means that since, therefore, the Torah is basically the expression of everything that exists, of all of creation, so God, as we say in the davening, Amechadish L'tuvo B'chol Yom Tamid Ma'aseh V'Reishit, this exactly confers what is happening. God engages in Torah every day, looking into the Torah, learning Torah, if you will, in order to renew his creation, because out of that Torah is where creation came to be with his creative powers. And that being the case, so once again, instead of God being, I would say, separated from his Bria, the first thing he does when he wakes up is he looks into the Bria. He looks into the Torah, which tells everything. Hafach ba ba hafach ba de kula ba. We know, turn over the Torah because everything is in it. He built the creation out of that Torah. And the first thing when he wakes up that he does is to focus upon that Torah and focus upon the Bria and add to the creation every day, renewing it. In fact, it's amazing what the Maharal says. The Maharal says, as a result of this, that we shouldn't understand it only as I, in fact, was understanding and always understood it. That when it says God renews creation, I thought maybe he created new asteroids and, you know, some new things he added on to creation. But it's much more than that, says the Maharal. The Maharal says that therefore, Nechshav kol yom lebria bifnei atzma. What an incredible idea. Every day is considered like its own creation. We think the creation's been around for 5,700 whatever and something years. Every day is a new act of creation in total by the Kaddish Baruch Hu. And that's why it says, he says, the first 3 hours he engages in Torah. Just like when he created the world initially, he looked into the Torah, so too, he recreates it again and again every day when he looks into the Torah. Every day on this earth is a different act of creation. It's interesting that not only is this said by the Maharal, but the same thought is expressed identically in independent sources quoting on their own. So, for example, in the Hagdama of the Ha'emek She'ela of the Netziv to the She'iltot of Rapai Gaon, it's brought down regarding this Gemara the same approach as brought by the Maharal. Near the Perush HaKadosh Baruch Hu Osek B'Torah, Hainu Hach Shesidro Kenehug B'Birkat Yotzer, or just like we said, HaMechadesh B'Tu B'Chuyam Tamidu Aseh Reshit, U'Barur Shemechadesh B'Otan Ofen Shebara Mitchila. It's clear that God therefore creates in the same manner as he did originally. This is called his Esek B'Torah. And he therefore adds beyond that, Ein kol yom doma lechaveiro. No one day is like any other day. Rabosai, do you hear this? No one day on this earth is like any other day. It says in Kohelet, Ein chadash tachad ha-shemesh. There is nothing new under the sun. But as the Mefarshim say there, that's mitachad l'shemesh. Aval amala min ha-shemesh, yesh shinui v'chidush. But once God is working on this beyond the scope of the sun, in his transcendental laboratory and environs, that goes beyond any boundaries, working there, he then has the ability to in fact make all sorts of nuances in this world. The Sifte Chaim, in his second volume of Emuna and Bechira, expresses a similar notion exactly. He says regarding this Medrash, and the Medrash we quoted from Breishit Rabbah, HaTorah Omeret Ani Ayiti Kli Umnato Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Quoting the Medrash, that the Torah says that I was God's artistic tool, I was his vessel through which he was able to create this world by looking into me and creating a world. So too he says, the continued existence of creation comes about through the power of Torah. And adding beyond this, he says beautifully, Hare Briyat Olam Lo Haita Ma'ura Chad Pa'ami. The creation of the world was not a one-time event. Ume'az Hi Mitayemet Me'atzma. And then, as we pointed out, the deist would say, it just continues to exist on its own. No. Elok Kadosh Baruch Hu Boreat Abriya Mechadash Bechol Rega. Rather, God creates the world every moment. This is reminiscent to me of the Balatanya. I remember the Balatanya discussing Kriyas Yamsuf, the notion of the splitting of the sea. We may think that when God split the sea, so he did this great miracle, and he just kind of, you know, pushed a button or, you know, waved his hand, and then the sea split. And we might say that in that particular act, says the Balatanya, which went against nature, the nature of the sea is that it's together, it's not split. So for God to do something against nature, you might say it requires his absolute involvement. But otherwise, God doesn't have to be involved in this world. It's only after he has to do this nace of splitting the sea. But actually, the Balatanya says beautifully, it's not so. Because we know that God created the world, yesh miayin. That God created the world, something out of nothing. Which means that the whole notion that there should be something here that actually exists, that there should be anything here, that itself is against nature. The natural, if you will, situation was, miayin, there was nothing. So in order for there to be a physical existence of a world and of its creatures, it requires God's constant involvement in the world. This is the beautiful idea of the Baal HaTanya. And so too, as is being said by the Sifrei Chaim and these others, that it requires God's involvement, and we're saying is involvement in being Osek B'Torah, that continues to allow the world to function and exist. I would like to now take it a step further. Someone asked in my shiur, when I gave this shiur, what Torah did God look into? In other words, when he looked into the Torah, so it was the Torah, as we know, of 613 mitzvot. I mean, I told the person when he asked that obviously God himself, if you will, is bound by the Ikrei Emunah. God himself is not allowed to change the Torah and to just fool around with the Torah. We know that. Lo b'shamayim hi, as the Gemara says. That God himself cannot change what's in the Torah. We have to follow the Torah. And he has to follow his Torah. So, what Torah is he studying? He meant, this person who asked further, he said, is he studying Chazal also? Is he studying Gemaras? Is he studying Muksa, rabbinic laws, in terms of his ethic for Torah? What Torah is he studying, he asked me. So I'd like to make the following comment about that. I think it's a very, very deep comment. You know, Lurianic Kabbalah has a notion that the world was created in such a way, this is the Torah of the Arizal, the mystical Torah, that God had to make a place for the world, what's known as Tzimtzum. In order to make a place, God had to contract everything. And then, after he contracted everything, the powers of creation were so powerful that the Kalim, in this animated description of things, the Kalim overflowed from God's creative energies, and they broke, in fact. And then there were klipot and shattered shards of the kalim everywhere throughout creation. And along with the good in creation, there is also evil in creation. And part of our goal is to restore creation, which was now fractured and broken, to its ideal unity. And we do that through mitzvahs. And we, by doing that and restoring creation, in a sense, according to the Kabbalists, as I understand it, we restore the Ribono Shel himself, as it were. That's why they say, and actually the Noti Yehuda and some others objected to this, but they say, not just Hinini Muchanim Zuman before they do a mitzvah, the Kabbalists, but they say, L'Shem Yichud Kedusha V'Shchinteh, they say that for the sake of the unification of God's holy name and presence that they're now going to perform this mitzvah, because it is their belief if they do this mitzvah with, of course, the proper kavanas, the proper intention, that they can, in fact, restore unity to the world and, as it were, to the Creator as well. And so with that point of view, you understand that mitzvahs are extremely powerful for one who is into Kabbalah, because mitzvahs have cosmic significance as a result. Now, the truth of the matter is that the Gemara, which the Rambam quotes in Hilchos Tshuva, has somewhat of an idea as well where we could say that mitzvahs also have cosmic significance, because we know the Rambam says that the individual is judged by God, who sits on this Kisei Adin we're talking about, that God judges the world, the second set of hours in the day, as we're saying now. And during that time, we know, how does God judge? We are told that a person's mitzvahs and averas are put on a scale. If the mitzvahs outweigh the averas, a person's a tzaddik. If the averas outweigh the mitzvahs, then a person's a rasha. If a person is in between in terms of the scale, then that person is a beinoni. So the Rambam goes on to say that it's that way by every individual, that way by every state, by every country, and indeed by the entire world. And understood in this way, we of course have to recognize that thereby it could be that the mitzvah or aveira that we do will in fact weigh the entire world toward either destruction or redemption. And if we understand in this way, then also not from the Kabbalistic view alone, but from the rationalist view of the Rambam, we can see as well that we have a notion of mitzvahs being able to have cosmic significance, that every mitzvah you do matters, not only in your own personal life, but even on a cosmic scale, because you never know what level the world is on now in terms of its judgment from Hashem, and how your mitzvahs or averas can tilt the scale one way or the other. But the chiddush I would like to make now is this. We can suggest from this Gemara, when we say that the Kadosh Baruch Hu is Osek B'Torah, that perhaps it means that He is Osek not only in the Torah which He gave us to Klal Yisrael, but He is Osek in the Torah which we are Mechadesh. That is to say that every time a Rav Chaim, a Rabbi Kiva Eger, the Rav, when we have our own Chidushim, when we reveal that aspect of Torah and bring it forth from its hiddenness, we're megala it, when we bring that light out into the world, when we do that, the Ribono Shel Olam is Osek in that Torah. When we say that in fact God in His goodness, V'ein tov ela Torah, ki lakach tov natati lachem, I will add, when He is mechadesh betuvo, b'chol yom tamim maaseh b'reshit, when He is mechadesh b'ketuvo betuvo with this Torah, but it's His Torah which has now been contributed to by our Torah. And it could be that when we have new creations in the world, discoveries of new species, technology being advanced to a level beyond its where it's ever been before, medical discoveries to heal those who are sick, whatever nuances may come to our world, all this perhaps comes about through our Esek B'Torah, because our Esek B'Torah and our Chidushim then become part of the overall corpus of Torah that is before the Kadosh Baruch Hu, that He looks into, that He learns, that Rav Chaim, that Rabbi Kiva Eger. And by so doing, by Him being Osek in that Torah, He creates anew this world. That being the case, adding to what's been said by the great Mefarshim, it's true that no one day is like the other. And God looks into the Torah every day to renew His creation and to create the world anew. But so too, while He's looking in there, we have to recognize that also our ability to contribute to the Chidush HaOlam, is there as well and dependent upon our involvement in Torah. Our involvement in Torah can also have cosmic significance. Just as the Kabbalists see that the doing of a mitzvah correctly can restore the unity of the world, so our involvement in Torah and our chidushim in Torah can contribute as well to the ultimate perfection and redemption of the world. May we be zoche to thereby never underestimate what we can do with our Limud HaTorah. It is not just an intellectual involvement. The ramifications of that particular mitzvah are great indeed. And that's why the Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam, Talmud Torah, is equivalent to all other mitzvahs. The Ribbono Shel Olam himself is osek in that mitzvah of Talmud Torah, and that mitzvah of Talmud Torah, where we become partners in creation with Ribbono Shel Olam. Ultimately, as we perfect the study of Torah, we will perfect His world as well, until the coming of Mashiach Tzidkenu, b'mehera b'yameinu.